And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, usual suspects, unusual suspects, to our combination Visionary Activist Show and Trickster Training Council. I am your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we're combining. We're getting two birds stoned with one scone while multi-slacking, because I'm departing for the Eclipse Festival near Prineville, Oregon, where Emma Kayla Gaston and I will be co-emceeing the Hub Stage. So today, every time, is Mythic News Eclipse Special. Solar eclipse in Leo with Regulus, the heart of the lion, on August 21st, welcoming the dark in order to be making light of darkness. Yes, there we go. So we'll be joined in a few minutes by fellow astrologer Gemini Brett, who's also journeying to the eclipse and tapping into our council from Idaho. But first, as an uninitiated Mars plays conflagration poker, we are exploring the eclipse in this cahooting together, the Mars, Venus, and Mercury cycles, Mercury now retrograde, diving into the Sun for a death and rebirth, will be stationing to go direct September 5th at the eclipse degree, 28 Leo, which is the Mermaid Sabian, as Mars gets ready to be born anew. We will be unfurling all of these things. You know, Friday and Saturday this weekend, before dawn in the east, a beautiful waning crescent moon right before the eclipse joins Venus. You know, and mythologically, it's for the fifth releasing of the old from which she previously gained identity. And more, all woven into personal and collective pertinence, may it be so. I want to also honor colleague Dale O'Brien's useful, intriguing eclipse presentation, findable on YouTube, Earth Changes in USA from Solar Eclipse Path. So Dale says this eclipse crosses America from the Pacific Northwest, going through the land of Lincoln, and exiting America at Fort Sumter, South Carolina, everything speaking to us, which occasioned Dale to say a month ago that this eclipse path is especially about race, democracy, and as we would put it, eclipsing the smoldering toxicity of the Confederacy and the patently delusional fetish of white supremacy. All supremacy into the eclipse cauldron. So eclipses happen, thanks to astrological ally Maurice Fernandez, because the Sun is 400 times larger than the Moon and is 400 times farther away. The Sun is 108 suns away from the Earth, and the Moon is approximately 108 moons away from the Earth. There we go. With some fluctuations due to the Moon's elliptical orbit. So I am an eclipsophile from the very first one I saw with my brother Joe, born August 21st, and I will be taking him to this one in Oregon in 1970, Assateague, Virginia, and then Hawaii and Aruba and Turkey with Andy Weil, Dr. Andrew Weil, and the team of Paul Stamets and other really great humans. There will be another eclipse on April 8th, 2024, which crosses America the other way from Eagle Pass, Texas, on into the Northeast. Dale reminds us, eclipses always travel from west to east, which is why we are now playing a skosh of this Bob Dylan song, I See My Light Come Shining from the West Down to the East.
Everything can replaced. Yet every distance is not near. So I remember every face of every man who put me here. I see my light come shining from the west unto the east. Any day now, any day now, I shall be released. This every man needs protection.
So there we have Bob Dylan, "I See My Light Come Shining from the West Down to the East," as all eclipses move from west to east. So now, how wonderful to welcome fellow astro colleague Gemini Brett. His website is morethanastrology.com. So welcome, Gemini Brett.
Thank you so much. It's a treat to be here. Woof.
Woof, exactly. That's very wonderful. And I think I first met you when you were giving the kind of astro-esoteric tour of Washington, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, excellent. So you know, there's so many places I've been reading and listening to you online as well, and checking out other astrologers, and there's many things that we want to cavort with. But I like part of the fantabulousness about a total eclipse is a very, very different, completely different, nothing in common with a partial eclipse, completely different experiences. Because as totality approaches, the winds pick up, and very often striation bands sweep across the land, like, and it gets quite spooky. And then at the moment of totality, everyone really does go, oh my God. And we see stars, and in this case, we'll see those in the path of totality, we'll see planets. So we'll see Mars right next to the sun. We'll see Venus, and we might see Mercury. And do you want to guide us into what we'll be seeing and Mars in cycle?
Sure. And one thing we'll see is the moon move from the west to the east. So I love that you bring in that great song by Dylan and the band. There's a thing, I guess, how do I bring this into the cycle of the planets? Well, Mercury retrograde in Virgo will do. So we think priestess, right? In the Virgo mystery school is shamanic astrology, and Daniel Gemario, who was my first teacher, invokes the sacredness of that archetype. And then it's harder to speak about priest, right? Because that word carries so much connotation in our day. So I usually go to druid or yogi.
Wizard. But I like wizard.
Yeah, wizard feels so Scorpio to me, but I'm going to try that on in the Virgo mystery.
No, may all men emerge from this eclipse as wizards.
Yeah, instantly, right? Just
well,
bearded,
sure.
And staffed.
Or sooner, yes. Well, yeah, because I'll get into the mythology of the return of the king and King Arthur and everything. But yes, you stay with Mercury and wherever you want to go.
Yeah, I love that because there's some of that here, but I've also just thinking about, you know, the retrogrades always bring me back to, okay, what was the old way? And there had to have been a time, I would think, before like the so-called priest class would tell you not to go outside to see the great mystery of the eclipse happen, right? Where we get to see that diamond ring in the sky and the sacred union of moon and sun. And there's a thing that I always love to turn folks onto, which is that, yes, because the earth spins from the west to the east, we notice the heavens moving from the east to the west. That's the daily motion, right? Diurnal motion, we call it the primary direction. But the other motion, the zodiacal motion, like from Libra to Scorpio, et cetera, is from the west to the east. And the moon is the only body that moves fast enough where you can witness this in one night. So if you watch a full moonrise and engage with it for a few hours and track the geometry of her body to patterns of the background stars and planets, you'll actually see that during her movement from the east to the west, rise to set, she's also moving slowly in the other direction. And it opens something ancient. And so during the eclipse, we will actually see that. We'll see moon crossing the sun's body in that direction while together they're moving from the east to the west. So perfect song. Thank you.
Yeah. And it was another colleague, wonderful Rick Klimchuk, who pointed out that Mercury retrograde, again, we just take everything, we believe nothing, entertain possibilities, everything is guiding to return, to go back. And he pointed out that when Mercury goes direct, September 5th, it will be at the same degree as the eclipse, which is just kind of intriguing. Because you'd said when we were speaking backstage, you know, that Mercury, you know, we may or may not see it because it's so close to the sun, even at the moment of totality. But I want to. It's a couple degrees away to the left if people are in totality. And you said that Mercury's, you know, diving for the underworld, right, for its death.
Yeah, and I'll also say that because he's in a pretty wide loop in his pattern, because he doesn't just go back and forward on the same track as we kind of draw it with the zodiac, he has latitude as well, right? He's well below the ecliptic. He's further from the sun than he looks on the chart, is what I mean to say. And he's about equidistance from the sun as Mars, but of course Mercury not as bright. But yeah, I mean, these cycles, you know, so a great place to start with what we call synodic cycles, and synod means meeting, is at the meeting. So for example, most of us work with the lunation or the moon-sun cycle, starting with new moon, right? Because we have that syzygy of Earth, Moon, Sun. And we get this also with Mercury or Venus, who we know their orbits exist between Earth's orbit and the sun. So there, every about 4 months' time is Earth, Mercury, Sun. That's the very middle of his retrograde period, and we call it Kazemi, in the heart of it, or in the throne room of the king, it was said. And every 19 months, Venus, Sun. So for Mercury, who thrice great, stations retrograde for 3 weeks at a time, 3 months a year, this is this very sacred moment in his cycle where he himself is kind of composting the wisdom of the last 4 months into rich soil to plant the seed for the next 4 months. And with Mercury, he goes through the elements. He's been doing his retrograde motions in the earth element in 2016 and 2017 alike. And he going direct in the fire of Leo at the end of this cycle, as you mentioned, it's also showing us where he's going to move our collective energy. I like to call it the overmind when I speak about Mercury, towards the fire element the next couple of years. So now we're in our very actually last cycle of six that has been tuned to the earth, tuned to the, what we could say maybe the body mind, and in Virgo, you know, a sign long associated with Mercury, his or her nocturnal sign. So there's something of this kind of mastery about coming into body consciousness, and I'll retrograde back to the last episode of your radio show where you had Ghost Dance on with Michael Stewart Ani, right?
Yeah.
And he spoke about the importance of communion with the plants and plant spirit, right? And right. I feel that there's a lot of that in this Mercury retrograde in Virgo too.
That's great. I just want to go back over. I haven't heard enough the term Kazemi, right? Just tell us again what Kazemi is so we can throw it around and integrate it into our vocabulary.
Sure. So technically what Kazemi is, and there's some argument, but most say it's when any planet is within either 1 degree of the sun on either side, or some say actually was in later time. The 1 degree thing seems to be the Hellenistic transmission from a couple thousand years back. And then in the medieval days, they used like 17 arc minutes away from the sun, which is very close. But when a planet is there, it's like magic. And the translations I've heard is in the heart or in the throne room of the king. So in a sense, like, you know, when Mercury is just between Earth and Sun, which will be August 26th here, 5 days after the eclipse, it's like you can look to that sun. You're not going to see Mercury that day, but you can look there and know that the messenger is between you and the great source of light, right?
That's great.
But they, they'd say the same thing for like Mars, which is really interesting because you then get Earth, Sun, Mars, right? Mars way out there as far from Earth as possible. But to me, it's like somehow the Sun is lensing the energy of Mars, right, through the core of the Sun into our heart or into our consciousness. And it's fun because most of the old astrology, as we know, it's like, okay, this is bad, this is worse, this will get you killed, this was worse than getting you killed. And when a planet's within 15 degrees of the Sun, they call it under the beams, which makes a lot of sense because when a planet gets close, we know, as you invoked with Mars earlier, we can't see that planet. They're in the underworld, right? And you can actually see the beams when you watch sunset and you get that kind of yellow layer. Right. If planets are in that zone, it's just too bright for them to be seen. Sometimes Venus can rock it there. But when planets got within 8 degrees, they called it combust, and then it's even worse. But then somehow within 1 degree, it's all good and it's party time. And this is like the sacred moment for that planet, which I just find fascinating. It's not what I bring into my own personal transmission of astrology, but I like to tell those tales because I honor.
But that's great because, you know, Kazemi, it's almost onomatopoeic. Like it's like Kazam, Kazemi, all right. And just to go backwards, to retrograde back over some of what you said and then hand it back to you. But so, yes, you set us up for Mercury retrograde, remembering going back, you know, and the Emerald Tablet of Hermes. True without falsehood, certain and most true, that which is above is as that which is below, and that which is below is as that which is above, for the performance of the miracles of the one thing. And it goes on, you know.
Oh, yeah. And how does it go on? And as all things have been, right?
Right.
I love that so much. And are born of this one adaptation of one, right? And I think he's speaking to us in so many ways of spirit, which for me is the all. And that is symbolized by sun. And then moon, which I feel is soul. It's the reflection or the adaptation or the translation of the all. It's not some little division of it. And that every soul is a reflection of totality. And so in these times of totality, when we see this diamond ring, you know, a symbol of their sacred union, one of the great mysteries that we are able to engage with is that soul and spirit are the same size, right? Because of the whole 108 thing you invoked earlier. There's a little bit more to the 108 if you'd like me to share.
I would. Sure.
Okay, so moon on average is 108 moon diameters from Earth. Sun on average is 108 sun diameters from Earth. Sun on average is 108 Earth diameters in diameter. Right.
Oh.
And it brings us into 108 beads on the mala, 108 divine names of the goddess in some traditions, 108 emotions in some traditions, 108 double stitches on the baseball, and it goes on and on and on, this magical number. And eventually, I don't know that it's where we want to go right now, but it could bring us to the sorrow cycle, because six stars is 108 years.
Wait, do that again, because we do want to go into the Metonic cycle, which you explained to us. Again, we love facts and mystery, facts and myth, and the sorrow cycle. So, yeah, right. And I like, and again, just a little sidebar, I like the idea of 108 emotions going, we need to stretch our emotional repertoire so that it's not just, you know, three emojis, for God's sake, but 108 emotions, good. But yes, take us into the, you know, science knowledge of Saros cycles and the Metonic cycle. And I can't help but mention it because every 19 years, the Metonic cycle, which you and Maurice have schooled me in, you know, it's every 19 years the eclipse reoccurs at the same place. You know, so August 21st, 1998 was also at 28 Leo, and also pretty close to Bill Clinton's son, S-U-N, and 4 days before that eclipse is when he did what mathematician Michael Schneider calls the ejaculation proclamation, where he goes, yeah, I did. Yeah, good. All right. Now, okay, so that's the Metonic cycle. Every 19 years, the eclipse occurs at the same place in the sky. Now back to you, Gemini Brett. The Saros cycle is
Well, let me say one more thing about the Metonic cycle, because they're short-lived, and without getting too technical, for you out there who study astrology, you'll know this, that we only have a solar eclipse at new moon if moon and sun are close to Rahu or Ketu, the lunar nodes. And that's the greatest eclipse myth, Rahu Ketu, which maybe we can get back to also. But so if the new moon's not close enough to the nodes, because what they are is from Earth's point of view, where the path of the moon and path of sun crossed, then from our point of view, moon's above or below the sun, and all we see is the sun. And the nodes are in an 18.5-year cycle, where the metonic cycle is 19 years. And just to say this about the metonic cycle, which is brilliant, is it's 19 solar years. And 235 lunations, meaning new moon to new moon, are equal. And it takes 19 years in a way for the solar and the lunar calendar to agree. So if you were born, for example, Leo with a Pisces moon, when you're 19 years old on your birthday, that same thing will happen every 19 years. But eclipses can only last in this metonic way, even though there'll be a new moon every 19 years. It will only be an eclipse every 19 years for about 4 or 5 periods. The nodes themselves are not on a 19-year cycle. They're on an 18.5-year cycle. They separate from the new moon to the point where you can't have an eclipse. This particular eclipse is member to what I call a metonic string of 4 eclipses. It was in August of 1979, 1998, this year 2017, and then 19 years from now in 2036. And it's pretty rare, and it ties a bunch of these what we call eclipse families together. Eclipse families we usually reserve for the Sero cycle or the Sorrow cycle, and I think we're here to bring some joy out of the sorrow.
Yes.
Caroline, did I lose you? Oh, no, I got
you. No, yeah. We're there. No, you hiccuped, and bless your heart, coming to us from Idaho, but it's all pretty good. So you're still there, right? Yep.
Yeah. I'm
excellent.
In an Airbnb and on the air and hopefully not dropping out again. Okay,
no,
so the other cycle, the sorrow cycle is 18 years, 11 days, and 8 hours. And so eclipses are in this kind of breath. It's like this shadow being with this breath that lasts 18 years and 11 days and 8 hours. And so the 11 days to me is a very important thing because the metonic cycle, as you mentioned, it's in the same degree of the zodiac, right? So this eclipse here in August 2017 is also going to be at Bill Clinton's sun. And maybe he's going to have the opportunity to time travel back to what was alive for him 19 years ago and clean something up. Who knows? We know that this eclipse is very strongly configured to Donald Trump's ascendant. And so that was also true for him in 1998, right? And back to 1979. It's like that, these 19-year cycles. But the 18-year cycle, it breathes, it moves through the zodiac. So here we have August 21st, 2017, 18 years, 11 days, and 8 hours before. It was like August 10th of 1999. And I know this can get so technical, but what's amazing is that there are these themes that live like this is this breath or this heartbeat of a shadow being. And the themes aligned to this particular sorrow cycle are amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. We hope you come back from the Airbnb. Calling Gemini Brett, coming back. Yes. Amazing. You're back.
Oh, hold on. I'm going to call in, Caroline.
Okie doke. I'll take it until you call in. There we go. So, yes, it's also Benjamin Netanyahu's Mars. Now, the easy thing, because in eclipses, you know, as Gemini Brett had mentioned, you know, when you go back to priesthoods, you know, and even now I've run into some grumpy Vedic people. Vedic can be wonderful, but who are like, no, you mustn't stand during an eclipse. It's bad. We go, no, it's a kind of priesthood thing. But, you know, through history, there's many different stories. And, you know, some we might choose to animate and, you know, in a playful, create theater or live melodrama Leo kind of way. You know, and some we throw into the eclipse cauldron, of course, that we really want to do. But it is traditionally associated with the downfall of tyrants. And we go, well, that would be okay. No harm, no hate, just, you know, again, moving off stage. It's like the last Symbiosis festival I was a part of, and here's the upcoming one where Amakay Lagasse and I will be co-emceeing the hub stage at this Eclipse Festival in Oregon beginning imminently on Wednesday. But something I keep with me always from that, there was a fantastic karaoke group on stage, and And at the end, when they were giving the awards, they were just quite wonderful. A kind of insane person, or you know, possessed, you know, leapt onto the and began dry humping everybody. And I was like, I don't think this is part of the act. And what will happen? And the wonderful MC, and may this be a part of all of us, just hooked her arm in the insane person's arm and said, "And you, dear, you come with me because you are fascinating," and just led her all docile and happy off stage. So that's how I prefer. We don't want violence. We don't want harm. We just go, "All tyrants, and you, dear, you come this way off stage because you are fascinating." There we go. So we got you back.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah, I was eclipsed and a new light was born.
There we go. All right. We'll hang with it. Good.
And now I can pace around. So sorry about that door squeak. Yeah, you know, I was at a festival a couple of years ago, and pardon the door squeak, was an eclipse. And what I noticed was there are a few people who were kind of like lightning bolts for the eclipse energy. And they just kind of went mad and everyone else seemed okay. And then next year it was also an eclipse. It was not a visible one. It was a lunar eclipse during the middle of the day. So I brought a group intentionally. And what we did is we kind of worked with the directions and then we sat north and looked through the earth where the eclipse was happening on the other side. And we kind of decided to be like the lightning rod of love for the eclipse for the festival. And it seemed to really take effect. So I really am appreciative of these festivals and these gatherings of bringing people together to celebrate these sacred happenings, right?
Right. You know, with again, just the right amount of, you know, guiding and autonomy, right? Because we say there's a lot of rituals, a lot of very spiritual people, and it's light and shadow, right? So I like to say in this Leo festival that we're all in right now, you know, Leo says create theater or live melodrama, and that the earliest form of theater really is ritual, which is simply any physical thing we do that we imbue with dedicated symbolism. The eclipse, which I do want to animate for everybody, for all of us, and then we'll keep going in our great to and fro, but you know, so it's everything real is also symbolic and available to us in a generous form. So what would we like eclipsed? You know, and just as the physical fact that, you know, as the moon moves across the sun, turning the sun into a crescent shape, you know, an image of itself, you know, again, the winds come up and it gets spooky and it's like, whoa, and then, you know, at the moment of totality, it's like so beautiful and the stars come out. So part of, and it's like, ah, so part of the metaphor is that it gets spooky. It gets spooky weeks before an eclipse, like, whoa, you know, and then afterwards we see possibilities we couldn't see. I mean, it's also this precise new moon. So we go, that's right. But I do want to just for everybody, for our dedicated team, you know, and out there, you know, just to ponder, you know, the simplest of, and maybe even most effective of rituals, which is what do we want to throw into the eclipse cauldron and what do we want to ladle out? You know, throw in anger, ladle out desire, throw in polarity, ladle out spiraling, right? Because spirals are nature's way of resolving conflict. And many, you know, just to prime the pump, many, many things that we want to play with. But yes, and while you were briefly changing, you know, from Skype to phone and everything too, I did want to mention, yeah, the downfall of tyrants, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, that would be good, you know, and it's not enough, of course, to get rid of Trump. It has to be Trump and Ryan and, you know, Pence and a clean swoosh. And of course, the model of eclipses, and I want to throw it back to you at this, you know, for this, is partly the thought that it's a kind of theater that has a resonance for a good 6 months, right?
Yeah, I feel 3 months before, 3 months after, but they can go a lot longer. And some of the old eclipse teachers, I mean, one thing with this eclipse so strongly aligned to Trump's nativity, I mean, I've never seen so many different simultaneous planetary transits at once. I mean, Saturn exact on his moon, et cetera, et cetera. There's a chance that the way that it's already played out is he eclipsed his competition last November. I feel like there's more to that, especially when I look at the way that this eclipse cycle's come around. So I want to be careful because Mercury pulled the plug on me earlier because I was getting too technical. So let's just say that there's this 18-year thing, right? And it came around.
But I love it when you say 18 years, 11 days, and 8 hours.
Well, it's important because it moves through the zodiac, right? Because the sun moves on average 1 degree per day. So 11 days means 11 degrees. And so unlike that metonic cycle, which is like a needle point in the same place of the zodiac, and for astrologers, we might think of it therefore more like a transit. I feel the Saro cycle works more like a progression because it's breathing and it's moving and it's dancing through the zodiac and it's animating the zodiac, and it's actually tying together these 11 degree separations, which isn't something that we look at often as astrologers. So this cycle began on January 4th, 1639, and it will run all the way until 2991, coming around every 18 years, 11 days, and 8 hours. And the 8 hour bit is so amazing too, because this is a third of the spin of the Earth, right? 24 hours for a day. And what it does is it moves then a third of the way around the globe. And it's also a north node eclipse, which is this one. It is. It starts at the North Pole with a very invisible eclipse that nobody sees. And then it snakes its way down and around the globe for an average 1,280 years. And as it approaches the equator, The strongest eclipse of this family will be in the year 2342 in March, a very strong Pisces chart. And it's something that I've brought my attention to. So in recent times, 1909, which was 108 years ago, 1927, 1945, 1963, 1981, 1999, and now 2017. And some interesting themes, especially when we look to this ancient omen of death of a king. Now, what does that mean? For one thing, you know, the sun was called the king. And doesn't the king die for, you know, a few hours or at least a couple minutes in totality as the moon comes to eclipse, right?
No, and excuse me, I don't want to throw you off because this is a great run, but I'm taking notes. So the Saros cycle began January 4th, 1669. Is that what you said?
1639 was the first. And interestingly, it was in the 14th degree of Capricorn, right across from what would eventually be the July 4th sun of the United States and Sirius. And it was the year of the first colonial constitution, the Connecticut Constitution, that year, right? Some amazing things were happening overseas in the Middle East, but, you know, tuned into the state since this one is bringing its shadow path sea to shining sea. Right. It was around in 1945, a month before Hiroshima, which is interesting and somewhat concerning. 1963, it was July 20th in the sign of Cancer, and was very strongly configured to John F. Kennedy's Saturn in his nativity, and we know he was assassinated on November 22nd of that year, many months later, but it still seems to me to have resonance, and there's technical reasons I don't want to share right now because I think it would go too far in that direction, but it next came around again in 1981, and this was the year that Reagan was shot, and then 99, which is the year that Clinton was impeached, right? And then a month later, after the eclipse the ejaculation proclamation eclipse in August of 1998. In February of 1999, there was an Aquarius eclipse across from Clinton's sun, and that was 4 days before he was acquitted by Senate. So it's pretty amazing when we see these eclipses with world leaders. It does seem to tune into some of these age-old transmissions. My question for me is, what does that mean for me? How can I use right. that reflection to do my own play.
Right. And what is a reach from the old priesthood of boogity, boogity, boogity? And what is the science part? And then what is the useful mythological part? And we love complexity. We love complexity because it's like, okay, all right, January 4th, 1639, the Saros cycle begins. All right, I just want to kind of track that because that's so beautiful. And just to underline, you know, that it is the 18 years, 11 days, 8 hours. I love that. Beautiful. I want to take that in.
Let me add just one more thing about that that I forgot to mention is that because it goes 8 hours, it takes 3 of these cycles to come back to the same longitudes or time zones. Mm. And So the 108 years is interesting because that's twice around the world. But the last time this one was here was 1963. So the last time it did bring its shadow path to America, and it was mostly through Canada and then just barely cut through Maine. That was obviously this year that will resonate forever probably in this country as the year of the death of the king. And right. I say this about Trump, too. The last time this cycle came around, his father died, and the time before that, his brother died.
Yes, so, and then I can hear part of our... Yeah, well, it's true, but I can also hear part of our audience going, well, yeah, everybody dies. Anyway, but yes, no, we take everything going, yeah, and also mysterious. But I like also that, well, into the cauldron, the past constraining priesthoods of, you know, orthodoxy or tyranny, and ladling out, you know, autonomy is a good sacrament. And I do want to just put in, you know, my own kind of mythological sense of the beauty of this is, you know, the sun and Mars are together. It's called Mars in the underworld in Leo. And I do want to bring up the myth that is so useful for us all to animate, which is, you know, at the end of the Grail legend, or what passes for the end, because myths don't really end, they get put on pause, and we want to hit play. King Arthur does not die. He goes to Avalon to take Pilates classes with the priestesses, right, to await the world's call at a time of danger when we need positive Mars within everyone, regardless of extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment, to return. We go, now! That would be really good. And the same is, you know, High John the Conqueror, the great trickster, folk hero, redeemer of the South, does not die. He goes to go live in High John the Conqueror route to await the world's call when we need the initiated Mars, the Mars as protector, hero, trickster, redeemer, to return in all of our hearts. And so, you know, we look at this eclipse and these beautiful patterns and the pattern of the eclipse chart itself, where the sun and moon exactly trine Uranus, trine Saturn, grand trine in fire. We'll come back to that. We go, now would be really good, you know, to call back. And that's where, let me hand it back to you, because you were saying, you know, Mars is getting ready to be reborn or to emerge as Mercury hurtles into the cauldron, blah, 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 to, you know, reinvent self. Mars is getting ready, and the heliacal rise of Mars, when Mars becomes visible again, according to latitude. But when is that, oh, Gemini Brett?
Most likely mid-September, as it is with all things Mars. It's kind of chaotic and hard to put a finger on the date. Usually we use a 15-degree separation from the sun. That story that you share, it's beautiful because it ties into that Mars. It ties into this retrograde Virgo Mercury. It really ties into Regulus, right? This eclipse being at the heart of the lion, which they said was the one star that ruled them all, the four royal stars, the markers of the heavens, the eye of the bull, Aldebaran, the heart of the scorpion, Antares, right, the southern fish that marks the water bearer, Fomalo, and then Regulus, they said, was the one that rules them all. I've been in a kind of quirky way calling this particular eclipse Neil Diamond, because we're going to see the diamond in the sky, and it's coming to America, but it's spelled K-N-E-E-L, because sages of old have long knelt before the star as the great ruler of the heavens. And the way that it ties to that great story that you just shared is that through the great effect of precession of the equinoxes or the great year, Regulus, the heart of the lion, has precessed into the tropical sign of Virgo in late 2011. So this is the first total solar eclipse at Virgo Regulus in about 26,000 years, which makes it such a huge deal. And, you know, what I've heard, what I taught, what I feel in my soul is that the true way of leader, royalty, whatever, Leo, is the service is not even just first to the people, but to the land itself. And I think Regulus in Virgo and Mercury retrograde in Virgo is calling this in. And so, yeah, there's one other thing that I've been kind of lensing this eclipse as, which is the celestial ultrasound. And what I mean by that is because Mars is so close to the sun under the beams, he's in a place where we could never, ever see him. In fact, we won't see him until mid-September. He was, in a way, conceived when he was Kazemi in the sign of Leo at the end of July. But he won't be born into visibility, right, in a way, coming through the birth canal sometime mid-September. And that will also be in the sign of Virgo, Yeah. So in a way, we're getting a look in this ultrasound into this birthplace, which interestingly enough is the sun itself, and a glimpse into this great mystery. On the other side, Mercury's at the very end of a four-month cycle, like having died, gone back into the light, but maybe not yet reincarnated, where he'll be born as a morning star on the other side. And so we're seeing this opportunity to gaze upon birth and death, and maybe we'll see how maybe they're the one and the same thing. Who's to say?
Yes, and then I just want to kind of animate that there will be a grand trine in fire, right, at the eclipse moment and all around now. I love the Sabian symbol for Mars, the eclipse moment, drunken chickens. All right, let's go ahead, playing the fool. You know, the sun moon is the mermaid, which was, see, it's also Monica Lewinsky's birthday. Her symbol was a mermaid awaiting her prince. And we go, no. But we want to do a round of backstage applause. She, you know, has matured in some profound and beautiful ways, not maybe more than Bill Clinton has. But anyway, so there's that. And then trine Uranus, which is at the music of the spheres degree, and trine Saturn, which is kind of, oh, bringing down new rules kind of thing. But so it is a grand trine in fire, and we do go, hot enough for you. And of course, so we want to be again encouraging everyone to throw the con of being snookered into polarity, into the cauldron, and ladle out the spiraling dynamic, which is so crucial. And we could even speak of Jupiter rising. I did double check the chart, you know, in Prineville, Oregon, and we might see Jupiter. It's right on the horizon at the moment of totality. But I want to throw it back to you for Spica, beautiful fixed star Spica, about, you know, sharing and, right. But so let us all be agents of cool, you know, in a hot conflagration poker world, not putting up with stuff at all, but spiraling and liberating in a dynamic spiraling out of the polarity, throwing maybe the overuse of the word fight into the cauldron and ladling out collaborate and dedicate. We're not going to fight global climate change. We're going to collaborate with nature. We're not going to, you know, the long, impactful, whatever. And again, as David Grimes says, just put a hyphen in impact and you won't have a problem with it. Imp act. We go, may imp act be born from impact out of this drunken chicken eclipse kind of realm. And then just because I can't help myself, passed on by David Grimes, you know, what happens when you play a horror movie backwards? Everyone gets healed by chainsaws and we all go camping. So anyway, I do love that. Because Saturn's retrograde, and we go, what do you get when you play a horror movie backwards? Well, that's a quite pertinent question right now. And Saturn says, let's go backwards to accumulate, you know, and syncretize each person listening, everything that has ever been a meaningful discipline or study or guide now wants to be brought into creative expression in some form. And I think what you were saying, Gemini, Brett, about kind of the Leo-Virgo connection is, to ancient mind, you know, healing and art were one thing. Ancient mind would be puzzled by the modern world going, what are you modern people talking about? That there's healing, alleged hospitals over there, and, you know, art galleries over there, and neither are that good. What are you guys talking about? There can be no one without the other. And I think in our souls, I love... some people call the eclipse, you know, the gate of heaven opens, you know, and we remember things, and we go in each one of our hearts. We remember that, you know, the purpose of Leo theater and art is not self-aggrandizement, but personal and collective healing. Mm. So back to you.
Beautiful. Yeah. I mean, keep it cool. Right. And so bring the water, and so bring the heart. And just what you share about the cauldron and this idea of composting, right? It's not just destruction and creation, right? It's taking these things that have limited us, or maybe not, maybe they've been the very catalyst for our growth and awareness. And now, having graduated from that particular curriculum, realigning those strong energies into things that say no, or from things that say no to things that say yes, right? So we can go into the shadow and bring back light, right? By playing with it. This is a time of shadow play. and bringing the heart into the scene, because yeah, there is all this fire. So one thing that we have is Venus in Cancer will be beaming from the height, especially in Oregon where you are. She will be culminating in the south. She's in the sign of Cancer, which is a very high altitude sign in the northern hemisphere. She's basically in a place where you can never ever see her, right? Because she's morning star and then the sun rises and she disappears, or the sun sets later in her cycle and she's evening star and then she follows the sun and sets. So we never see her at this place where, like, you know, the noon sun shines. I used to say that, but I saw her with my naked eye in Joshua Tree in the end of January. There's very rare times in her cycle where you can actually watch Venus all day long, even in sunlit skies. But when the light goes out and the riddle of night comes to the middle of daylight for this solar eclipse, Venus will look like a spaceship, I mean, coming for your eyeball, right? She's going to be the brightest thing happening by far. And I love that she's in Cancer in the sign of family and cozy and cuddles and, you know, so many, and really creator.
I do want to bring up Jade Jacobs' ancestor astrology, Jade Jacobs, who made the wonderfully accurate quip, a Cancer's just a Scorpio in a housecoat, which is, it's because it's just as fierce. It's just got a different PR. I'm very sensitive. So I view, you know, Venus in Cancer, especially at that Sabian, because I do love the Sabians. You know, it's a mantle of power thrown over the right shoulder, assuming mantle of responsibility, feeling the descent of powerful energies, having things thrust upon one, heeding a call, you know, cape-like flare, cloaking secrecy. So Venus in Cancer, Scorpio in a housecoat. But I love that, you know, and everybody, just for the fun of it, you know, for the serious, dedicated fun of it, you know, take a mantle of power thrown over your right shoulder, you know, and this is, yeah, I love how you delineated, yeah, to see Venus at this kind of height is so rare. And powerful and fun, and it's the art form of tending life in a fierce way. We're going to complete part of our cahooting right now. Is there anything more you would like to say at this point, O Gemini Brett? And then we'll go into part two.
Sure. Well, a final thought on Venus is that she, the new Venus in late March of this year, was in the sign of Aries. So we are talking about this warrior, pioneer, strong, fiery spark of the fire goddess. And if we invoke Inanna, right, you know, this is a time in the cycle where, if you know that great story, she's descending to the Kerr. She's just cleared the clutter of the heart. She's removed the breastplate called Come Man Come, and she's taking off this girdle of birthstones that represents the solar plexus, and she's coming into this place of will. So, yeah, I like that you say Scorpio in a different clothing, because we'll see how, you know, how is she shining on us at this time. But I think she's going to bring a lot of love and collection.
That's great.
That thing wows everyone.
Right.
Right. And then it's like, wow. And so when I'm out with like PhD astronomers and they can tell me the formation of that neutron star 3,600 light years away, and I say, isn't Saturn amazing right now? They say, which one's Saturn? Right. So I, fortunately, just through my own experience of the sky, and able to bring some of these PhD guys like down to Earth to witness the stars for the first time in their life. But so much of our issue here that we're healing is that science, or what we consider to be science, has allowed itself to lose the truth that these myths carry the great scientific mysteries of the day. And so the moon snakes about the path of the sun every month, right? And it goes above, from below to above, at the north node, or Rahu, the dragon's head, and comes back down at the dragon's tail. And this eclipse only happens with new moon, meeting by longitude, zodiacal degree, meeting at the nodes, meeting by latitude, the above and the below. And so if you show the astronomers and people these kinds of things, and then say, see why it's a dragon, see why it's a snake. Now look at the shadow that's forming. So very rare times during a total solar eclipse, you can actually see serpent shadows on the ground. So like, let's think about that. And I think if you can bring them into the magic of the mythos, it opens up, it's a gateway drug into a higher level of the magic, which might be this astrology.
That's great. No, and that's why Did You Know, you know, and again, the 108, and the 108 is so useful, you know, because we are pattern tracking beings. And the way I've liked to put it for a long time is that, you know, leading edge physics and, well, astrology, astronomy, as you say, you know, myths carry science, that cultures symbolically embedded their scientific knowledge in myths and fairy tales to be handed down in this way. I want to come back to the snake and the dragon, too. But so we say, well, leading edge physics now says there's meaning in patterns, right? Then the argument's over, right? Because we go, we're all agreeing there's meaning in patterns. There's patterns, and then the meaning of patterns, and that's what kind of got thrown out in the false divorce of the alleged enlightenment and everything, going, we just want the knowledge, no meaning, right? We don't want any meaning stuff. We just want the knowledge part, which stripped, again, science of its mythological moral guiding compass, enclosure, so we could just go, we're unsupervised Mars again, uninitiated until this eclipse, may it be so. We're going to put monkey genes in this tomato because we're unsupervised, you know, because there's no guiding mythos that is guiding the knowledge part. You know, did you know, you know, patterns have meaning, and then science, you know, physics and metaphysics get married again, and they can have a child, which is reverent science as though life mattered. Because also the sun and the moon, the wedding of the sun and the moon, it is like a spectacular wedding, and we can, in a time of prayer, you know, may it be that which has been falsely estranged be re-wed, you know, and with, as an offering, not a certainty, as an offering, a kind of metaphoric fountain. So there's the snake and the dragon eating the sun. But then there's the literalized, you know, kind of missing the point of all the kind of armies lined up, you know, shooting arrows at it, which is like kind of missing the point. All right, right. So what's your take on that?
Well, it just goes to what you said. But when we separate knowledge from meaning, suddenly this thing that says that a dragon's going to eat the sun, when we lose the meaning of that, right, which is in the mythos, now we need to fire missiles at the eclipse to make sure that the sun will come back. And I'll say, and just in the echo, or let's retrograde that, one of the answers to help the mysteries of astrology be remarried to astronomy, because, you know, actually they're one and the same, you know, astronomy. I love this quote from The Light of Egypt, Thomas Burgoyne, is that astronomy is two things. One, or astrology is astronomy and correspondences. Right. And these days, because astrology just lets the white coats, you know, the scientific cats do the astronomy for us, astrology, it can focus on the soul and looking down and stuff. But when astrology begins to look up again, and I'm very fond of this time, of saying that, you know, one of our responsibilities is to keep the sacred sciences sacred by also keeping them scientific. And we know plenty of astrologers who are so limited by the constrictions of language and rules that it just grows cold and is not alive. And then on the other side, there's so many people who are just totally woo and having no, I want to say, respect or grounding into the tradition, that it just gets lost. And I can hear people say, oh, 8-8 Lion's Gate, and it's alignments of the Sphinx and the Sun and Sirius. And it's like, you know what? No, it isn't. And can you explain that alignment to me? No, but I read it online, right?
Right.
And so one of the ways that we reclaim respect, because as, you know, you're mentioning, as science is coming to spirit because it's real, and the more they look, the more they open this portal to seeing the mystery. If we can stay grounded in reality and be able to communicate this language when they're ready to receive it, that's what we can, that's the side that we can play, right?
That's really, really great. That's wonderful. Yeah. And that's, I think that's a great kind of, outro. Would you just say one more time, rather than bringing scientists to astrology, let's bring science, just say that thing, because it's a great way for us to begin to close here.
Instead of bringing astrology to astronomers, let me bring astronomy to astrologers.
That's terrific. Anyway, so thank you so much, Gemini Brett, for this dance. It's really useful. So we're on our way out, and for our team, you know, there's also a free video call with me via the Shift Network on August 19th. Check out, you know, coyotenetworknews.com for more info and many ways to play upcoming councils. So all positive sizzly woof to us all as we outro with our kinship medley, which is one of my favorite songs, The Monkey Speaks His Mind, into all of our relations. So thanks to my Trickster Training Monday Council. Thanks to Gemini Brett. His website is morethanastrology.com, and the team at KPFA, it's Caroline Casey, reminding us all, better a trickster than a martyr be.
Yeah. The monkey speaks his mind. Now, three monkeys sat in a coconut tree, discussing things as they are said to be. Said one to the other, now listen, you two, there's a certain rumor that can't be true, that man descended from our noble race. The very idea is a big disgrace. No monkey ever deserted his wife, starved her baby, and ruined her life. Yeah. The monkey speaks his mind. And you never known a mother monk to leave the babies with others to bump, or pass them on from one to another till they scarcely knew who was their mother. Yeah. The monkey speaks his mind. And another thing you will never see, a monkey build a fence around a coconut tree and let other coconuts go to waste, forbidding all other monkeys to come and taste. Why, if I put a fence around this tree, starvation would force you to steal from me. Yeah, the monkey speaks his mind. Here's another thing a monkey won't do. Go out at night and get on a stew. Or use a gun, a club, or knife to take another monkey's life. Yes, man descended the weightless bum. My brothers, from us he did not come. Yeah, the monkey speaks his mind.
Catch Apex Express on KPFA. Apex Express is a weekly program following news and cultural events throughout Asia and the Pacific Islands. Find out about issues affecting Asian American and Pacific Islander communities locally and globally. Get on board the Apex Express Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. on KPFA.
Charge up your afternoon with hip-hop and social justice talk on Hard Knock Radio at 4, followed by Frontline Investigative News on Flashpoints at 5, and get a comprehensive wrap-up of the day's events on the Pacifica Evening News at 6, all starting today on KPFA, where we stay vigilant as always.
Make a smart investment. Support KPFA Radio today. We make the most of every dollar donated by producing truly independent news, analysis, cultural, and public affairs programming. You are essential in keeping that information flowing and KPFA on the air.
Invest today. Become a member or an ally as a monthly sustainer. Online today at kpfa.org. And we promise to stay as vigilant as always.
You are listening.